Hello, and welcome to episode 114 of Admission Straight Talk. That's number 114. This is the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you high-five the person next to you and exclaim, "Yes, I'm in." Sustainability. We have sustainable buildings, sustainable enterprises. Some people talk even about sustainable cities. And I recently saw a book on Amazon called Sustainable Happiness. But what does the ability to sustain anything and everything have to do with graduate admissions? Well, I receive a lot of inquiries, emails, calls, and posts from applicants interested in sustainability, particularly in the business realm. Sometimes it's clean tech, sometimes it's sustainability. So I thought it's a topic worthy of a show. But first, I have a quick reminder before we get to our show. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/114 and ask your question in a comment. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. We're developing and sustaining a wonderful and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to share your thoughts and concerns. Now that we're back to sustainability, I'm talking with two representatives of the Ross School of Business, a leader in the realm of sustainable business and the MBA. We're going to learn about its MBA admissions and program, and also about what it offers applicants and future business leaders interested in sustainability and clean tech. I'm thrilled to have as guests on Admission Straight Talk two representatives of the Ross School of Business. Diana Economy, Senior Associate Director of Admissions at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business, and Terry Nelidoff, Managing Director, Erb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprise at the University of Michigan. Before joining Ross in 2012, Diana worked at A.T. Kearney, Kirkland & Ellis, and Boston Consulting Group. Terry spent some time in the Peace Corps and most recently worked for Business for Social Responsibility before joining the University of Michigan in 2013. Terry and Diana, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Delighted to have you both here today. Now, Diana, can you start by giving us an overview of Ross's regular full-time MBA program, the two-year program?
Sure. So our two-year program, as you mentioned, is indeed 2 years, and it starts off, Linda, with core courses in your first year that you take for your first three quarters. You have an opportunity to take some electives in your first year, but really the highlight of that first year is our MAP program, or Multidisciplinary Action Project, which takes place the last 7 weeks of your first year. What MAP is an opportunity for students to engage deeply in a consulting-like project all over the world with Fortune 500s, with startups, with social impact-oriented organizations, where they're applying what they learned in the first three quarters of their first year to this project that they engage with at the end of their first year. People see it really as an opportunity, almost as a second internship, to really get a good handle on different areas of focus throughout the MBA program. And in your second year, you're able to take electives and customize that as you wish based on your area of focus. But the foundation that underlays our entire MBA program is action-based learning, or learning by doing. So we feel that the best way to get the most out of the program is to be thrown in to really have real-life scenarios presented to you and to use the concepts presented during the program to help solve some of the challenges. So throughout the MAP experience, throughout several of our courses, we are trying to put students in real-world situations that they would might see in the professional experience.
Now, you're also a Ross alum. Did they have MAP and the action-based focus when you were at Ross?
Yeah, good question. So it was actually one of the reasons that I chose Ross, because I was looking to really get some hands-on experiences to really further my own skill set. So in addition to participating in a MAP project in India, where we took a look at the vocational training system in India and tried to figure out how the public and private sectors could come together to help train the workforce over in India to make it accessible for multinationals to have the talent that they needed. I also took several courses in my second year that really allowed me to practice what I was learning. I even had an opportunity to take courses outside of Ross.
Huh.
So you can take up to 10 of 57 credits outside of Ross.
At the University of Michigan?
At the University of Michigan, right. So University of Michigan has over 100 graduate programs ranked in the top 10. And Ross is in very close physical proximity to most of the major graduate programs that students would be interested in. So I took, for example, a higher education strategy course at the School of Education. And I even had an internship in the provost's office taking a look at revenue generating strategies for the university. And frankly, those two experiences helped to frame my current career path, which is within the higher education space. So
sure.
I think the University of Michigan and Ross offer tremendous opportunity to explore what you're passionate about, whether it be within the walls of Ross or just outside.
Great. And Terry, what is the Herb Institute and what is sustainable business?
Well, two really good questions that we hear a lot. The Herb Institute is a partnership between the Ross School of Business and the School of Natural Resources and Environment. And we work to promote business sustainability across basically three platforms, research, teaching, and business engagement. And the Herb Institute was founded some 20 years ago and today has the largest alumni base of any business sustainability institute in the world. We have roughly 400 alumni across 17 countries now. And in essence, we work with our students, alumni, and our business partners to equip them with practical tools and experiences to help them be business leaders for sustainability.
Okay. Can you give an overview of the degree options offered by the Herb Institute?
Yes. So one of the Herb Institute's flagship programs is the dual degree program between Ross and the School of Natural Resources. And this is where students study 3 years, and they receive both the MBA from Ross and then the Master of Science from the School of Natural Resources. And actually, we should highlight that it's designed as a three-year program. In practice, it can be completed in roughly 2.5 years if the students plan ahead and fill Ross electives with required courses from the School of Natural Resources. And we see the dual degree program as a really unique option at Ross for MBAs interested in a deep dive into sustainability and business. And one of the characteristics that we're known for at the Herb Institute is this incredibly tight, really passionate student community. It's kind of a family within a family, within the Ross family business school.
How many people are enrolled in the dual degree program? I'm just curious.
So we have approximately 65 students studying across the 3 years.
I see. It's about 20 per class, really, then.
Yes. So it's a really tailored program. Very hands-on. We have a staff of 5 people in the Herb Institute, as well as the managing director, a faculty director. So it's really kind of a tailored experience to cultivate future business leaders for sustainability.
And Linda, I would add, it's an incredibly connected community. As Terry mentioned, there's not only the great resources that support the community, but the community itself is really a nucleus within the broader Ross community, even of people who are thought leaders within the space, and really they're really seen as leaders throughout our community.
Okay, so if let's say I'm attending Ross and I'm in the full-time MBA program, I'm not in the joint degree program, I can still take classes at the Herb Institute, can't I? Or can or that as a natural as it, or would it be really at the School of Natural Resources.
Yes. Well, the classes actually are the same. Okay. The Herb Institute has only one signature course, which is called the Herb Seminar, which we design and deliver for the incoming Herb students each year. But basically what we do is we, as a dual degree program, our students study the Ross curriculum and take the core courses and electives from Ross, and they do the same from the School of Natural Resources. And then kind of the special sauce that the Herb Institute adds is that we fill the gaps in what we believe a dedicated sustainability professional needs to enter the marketplace and become a business leader. So we contribute co-curricular learning experiences through workshops, invited speakers. We have a special fund called the Herb Cool Projects Fund, where each student qualifies for $2,000 a year for a special learning experience through attending a conference or doing a field project in the U.S. or overseas or doing a workshop. We sponsor special research projects among the students, student activities, not only among the Herb students, but also to help the Herb students engage with the broader Ross community. Because I think Diana will agree that sustainability is a key component, and I think one of the differentiating factors of an MBA at Ross.
And what kind of jobs do graduates of this dual degree program, where do they end up?
They end up in across a broad range of industries, business functions, even countries. We actually advise our students to seek out core business functions in companies or in the nonprofits that work with companies, and to really gain credibility within the company, learn a particular business function, and then move up within the company ranks and position themselves as a leader within that company, and all along to integrate sustainability thinking, sustainability risks and opportunities into the core business decision making. We really believe that for sustainability leaders to have impact, they have to be working at the core of the business model of the company, then not so much on the fringes and not in philanthropy programs, but they have to be really working where the company makes its money, where the company is putting its attention. And so we actively encourage our students to go out and work in core functions such as operations, logistics, strategic planning, supply chain, and bring the Herb perspective for sustainability to those functions.
Okay, what is one of the coolest things a recent Herb Institute grad is doing?
There are a lot. How much time do you have? Scary question, scary answer. No, I'll highlight one. I think this is one a really exciting example. It's Cynthia Koenig, who is an Herb graduate, who started up her own company in India, originally based on the water wheel, which was this innovative product to help people in remote villages in India transport water by rolling it in a wheel instead of carrying it. And as you mentioned, I was in the Peace Corps long ago, and so I have a special appreciation for the time and the effort spent in transporting water in remote rural communities. And so Cynthia's been working on this now for almost 5 years now, and she's step-by-step building an entire company around this. Her company, Wello Water, no longer focuses just on a single product, but it's expanded its business model to promote water health and sanitation in rural communities across India.
Wow.
And so for us, this is just a great example because it meets a real human need in an emerging economy with a tremendous growth potential, which is India, but it's doing it through a market mechanism and a for-profit business model. And we believe that's where sustainability leaders will have the most impact in the long term.
Fantastic. And I want to go back to the full-time program in just a second, Diana. But before we do, now, does the dual degree program and the classes, the non-Ross classes, do they also contain an action-based learning component, a project component?
Yes, absolutely. Our students are Ross students, and they're also School of Natural Resources students. So our students typically, in the first year, they will do the School of Natural Resources master's research project, mm-hmm. and then in the second year, they'll do the multidisciplinary action project that Diana described.
Okay, great. Now, Diana, go ahead.
I just also wanted to mention that, you know, it's as I said, Herb Institute is focused on students that are really interested in a deep dive into business sustainability. Mm-hmm. It requires an extra year or half year, depending on how you plan it. We recognize that that's a challenge sometimes in terms of funding that extra year, And mm-hmm. so in addition to the scholarships offered by Ross and the School of Natural Resources, the URB Institute also has funding for partial scholarships to help with the extra burden of that third year.
That's great to know. Thank you. All right, Diana, from the Ross non-URB graduates, what is the one of the coolest things a non-URB Ross MBA is doing?
I'll second what Terry said about
so how much time do we have, right? Yeah. No, I know. You were both concerned about that before we started the call. Now I see why.
Yeah, no, it's, you know what, and we love interacting with our students and alums, and honestly, it's just so exciting to hear the different things that they're doing. I mean, now that I've been out for a few years, I mean, some of my classmates are really finding their niche in something that they're incredibly passionate about, whether it's educational consulting or working directly within, you know, a school district or charter management organization, or my friend Nicole, who's leading the marketing strategy for NASCAR to have them outreach to multicultural audiences. One of the things that I think is particularly cool that's actually something that our current students are doing is something called MBAs Across America.
Sure.
Where there are students who are working with small businesses and entrepreneurs across the U.S. to help them really ramp up their businesses and understand what some of the key challenges are so that they can really have an impact in their community, and really seeing that as potentially a vehicle for some social change. Our students were actually featured on a real, it wasn't really reality TV, it was a little bit more of a like documentary that Headline uh-huh. News did, following the students around the country as they worked with all these small business owners. So I thought that was a really cool way to be able to use really this multidisciplinary education that you're getting at Ross to apply it in a context that might be seen as a, perhaps a little less traditional for MBA students.
Yes. Well, actually, I interviewed the four original founders of MBA Across America right after they did their first summer internship when they were still students or second-year students at Harvard. And then I interviewed Mike Baker and Casey Gerald as they were getting MBA Across America started and having it spread to several top business school campuses. And Ross is a natural for it. I'm a fan. It's a great program.
It is.
Let's turn to the application, and I'll link to some of those older interviews, and I'll link to both those older interviews in the show notes, which will be at info.exhibit.com/114. Let's turn to the application. Diana, can you give me an overview of the admission requirements at Ross?
Certainly. So I will give you an overview and highlight a couple of things that maybe are a little differentiated in the Ross process.
Great.
So obviously, you know, first and foremost, we're taking a look at are you going to be able to be academically successful in our quantitatively rigorous program? With that, what we're taking a look at is your test score, either the GMAT or the GRE, your academic profile, and even your professional experience, if there are elements of it that would lead us to believe that there are transferable skills to our core curriculum and our academic experience. So the first pass is, are you going to be able to be successful in this program? That, of course, leads us to many, many people who've got maybe an academic foundation to be successful in the program. The next step is, what really differentiates candidates throughout the admissions process? Which then leads us to the other pieces of the application, which are, of course, your essays, your recommendation letter, your interview, and your resume. So to talk a little bit about some of the Ross-specific pieces, so this year, our essay questions, we have two of them. What are you most proud of and why, and how does it shape who you are today? And what is your desired career path and why? With the essays, what we're looking for is we're looking to get a better sense for who those candidates are. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people to sort of authentically present themselves through the lens of those essays. Where I see people go wrong sometimes with the essays is that they will write a good essay about what they want to do with their life, but they will not tie it back to why is that the right path for them. Not just that consultants solve strategic challenges that are interesting, but why is that an interesting path for you personally? And what are you going to offer to our academic community that's going to really make this a place to be and place for you to thrive? So candidates should really be thoughtful about telling us a little bit who they are through the lens of these essay questions that we've carefully selected.
Okay.
Additionally, we only ask for one recommendation letter versus two.
Mm-hmm.
We feel that there's probably one person that knows you really well. You know, if you've only got, you know, a handful of years of work experience, there's probably one person that can really, really tell us what your professional experiences have been and your contributions to that organization. So we have only one recommendation letter. We do have a required one-on-one interview that is by invitation only,
mm-hmm.
and an optional but highly encouraged team exercise where we take a look at team-based interpersonal and communication skills of candidates.
All right, great. Now, a few questions on your requirements. I remember years ago, I don't know if it's still true, calculus was required for Ross. Is it still required?
Calculus is not, no.
Okay. Encouraged?
Well, I think having a solid academic, you know, and especially quantitative foundation will make people successful in the courses. So to give you an example, in your very first 7 weeks, you're taking accounting, statistics, microeconomics, and strategy. So I always tell students, if you were just coming and just taking four courses and that was the only thing you were doing at school, that's one thing. But of course, that's never the case in any MBA program, and especially here, where you're not only coming in and taking academics, but you're also orienting to being a student again. You are thinking about your professional path. You are meeting new fellow students. There's so many different things that go into the MBA experience. So we want to make sure people are going to be able to be successful with this multifaceted experience.
Now, a question, actually, this is a question and a rumor. Let's start with a rumor. There's a rumor out there that traditional applicants, and by that I assume people mean consultants, bankers, et cetera, should take the GMAT, but it's okay for non-traditional applicants to take the GRE. What would you say about that particular rumor?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I used to be an HR recruiting manager for one of the top consulting firms, and consulting is actually the top post-MBA destination of our students. Almost 40% of our class goes into consulting. Mm-hmm. So I was curious about the same, Linda, because it keeps coming up, right?
Even right.
When we get asked on the road.
Right.
So we take a look at incoming MBA admissions information, and we tie it to outgoing career outcomes of our students.
Okay.
So because I was curious, I took a look at the top couple consulting firms and said, okay, of our students that landed an opportunity at these top consulting firms, what was the situation from their test score standpoint? What I noticed is a couple things. The vast majority took the GMAT, but that's also not surprising because many of our students do submit the GMAT. There
right.
were certainly students who had the GRE that landed opportunities at those companies. They were often dual degree candidates, which of course was the initial reason to open up the GRE to a broader population of people that might look at the dual degree program.
Right.
There were indeed people who had below a 700 who got opportunities at some of these firms. Now, of course, not the norm, right? The norm was 700 plus GMAT, but you know, it's certainly certainly you are able to make your way through the process if you've got either the GRE or below 700 GMAT, depending on other factors that I know the firms look for.
Okay, great. Does Ross have any preference between the GRE and the GMAT, forgetting the rumors?
We don't. Yeah, we don't. We take a look at both of them, and again, we're trying to gain confidence that students will be successful in our rigorous curriculum quantitatively, if they've got the quantitative foundation to also be successful.
Okay. Let's not talk about the academic stats at the moment. I'm not ignoring my – I actually gave the podcast I did a solo one last week, and I emphasized the importance of showing you can just do the work academically. It's really foundational for any graduate school application. But what makes an application come alive for you when you're reviewing it? I somehow don't think it's going to be the GMAT or GRE score.
No, you're right. It's so many of these other pieces that we talk about. Well, let me start with the first thing I take a look at is the resume. That's
okay.
The very first thing when I open up an application, it is the first thing I take a look at because it gives me a really quick snapshot as to who you are as a professional, as a learner, right? Where did you go? Where did you go to school? What degrees do you have? What's your professional career path been? And what type of impact have you had at the organizations that you've been a part of? Gives me a really quick overview before I deep dive into some of the other elements of the application. I think the resume is one of those pieces that people overlook. They
yeah.
say, I already have a resume. I'm already, you know, working at this company, and this is the resume that I have. Well, you need to craft your resume thinking about the fact that you're applying to business school, not just that you're applying to the next technical level up of whatever analyst, you know, career path you've been a part of. What that means is thinking about all the other pieces of your application and how your resume complements them. So, for example, resume might be the only chance that you get to really highlight some of your key professional accomplishments outside of the interview. But the resume is something that's going to lead us to say, as well as the rest of your application, should we grant you an interview? So the resume should serve as a standalone piece to really highlight some of those accomplishments. And I think people kind of overlook that a bit.
I agree. And the boxes. Same with the job history.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're going. I'm interrupting. What else makes an application come alive?
So in terms of an application that comes alive for me, it really is somebody who is very self-aware, and through the pages of their application, I get a really good feel of who they're going to be when they join our community. What makes them tick? What energizes them? I'm taking a look at all of those things to be able to really understand that, and that comes out through different ways. Sometimes it's through the lens of the essays. Sometimes it's through things that they may mention in their interview that, again, may not have been apparent in other parts of the application, but really give us a feel for who they're going to be when they join us in our community.
All right. Terry, whom do you want to meet in an application to the joint MBA-MS program at IRB?
Well, actually, everything Diana just said, IRB Institute is unique because actually applicants don't apply to the IRB Institute directly, but they apply to the MBA admissions department, and they apply to the School of Natural Resources admissions.
Mm-hmm.
However, when they arrive to the IRB Institute, and when they're accepted to both programs, then they become an IRB Institute dual degree candidate. What we look for when we're considering the scholarship component is really, there's one singular criterion, and it's a passion for the role of business and sustainability and a vision for that person's contribution to business and sustainability. As I mentioned before, we have a really tight community, very self-supportive, really focused on impact on sustainability through business. And we're looking for people that are really going to contribute to that community. And they don't have to have all the dots connected for the rest of the next 40 years of their career, but they need to be able to communicate the vision for how they're going to work with business and the nonprofits that work with business to move sustainability along. And our applicants come from a broad range of backgrounds. The majority come from industry or consulting. We have some from nonprofits, especially large nonprofits that work with companies on sustainability. We also have a lot of returned Peace Corps volunteers, a lot of military veterans. And so, again, the common thread that ties them together is this conviction that business can be a force for good in sustainability.
Okay, great. Now, you mentioned the importance of vision in your applicants or in the people that join the IRB community. What about past experience? I mean, do you want to see evidence that interest in sustainability wasn't just a passing fad or, you know, kind of a short-term thing that they got interested in suddenly?
We do want to see that interest. We can kind of check off the business checkbox because they're admitted to Ross. They're going to have potential for natural resources and environment work through the School of Natural Resources admissions process. What we like to see is that, again, as Diana mentioned, they're connecting the dots between business and sustainability and their own personal life. But that doesn't mean they have to have worked in an environmental NGO or they have to have worked in the environment health and safety department of a company. That experience can come from a lot of different aspects. Maybe it's a conviction for organic farming and a fascination with food supply globally that just comes from their own personal life. They pursued it through hobbies and activities and travel and their own personal projects. Maybe it's through Peace Corps experience, you know, which is also a great indicator of being able to integrate into a variety of different communities. So we're not looking for one particular type, but yes, the familiarity with sustainability issues and a personal conviction for sustainability are important.
And I think, Terry, you know, beyond that, it's pretty similar to actually the rest of our class. You know, 85% of the class that just graduated switched either function or industry when they came to Ross. Mm-hmm. So it's very common to have folks that are career changers, and it is that conviction that sort of propels them through the experience from a previous experience they may have had that wasn't as directly related to sustainability to one they might have then directly after, which has got a greater focus in their interest.
And that's a good point. We may actually contribute to that from the Herb Institute, because one of the unique features of Herb Institute is our students have two summer internships. Mm-hmm. And so they have an extra opportunity. We often advise them in the first year to go out and try something new. Think out of the box. If they were in consulting beforehand, maybe go work for an environmental NGO or a grassroots community development organization. If it's right, they can pursue it for their her career. If it's not, they have another internship the next year to dive into something that they're thinking about for a career. So it's great, and we're actively encouraging our students again to think outside the box and to think about new avenues for contribution to sustainability. And I would say that in most of the cases, it's not what they were thinking when they came in. And for us, that's a sign of success that we opened up new doors and new opportunities for them.
And I think even the MAP program actually offers some of that reflection to taking a MAP project in an area that might be focused on sustainability or an area that they're thinking of exploring and using that to say, yes, this is something I want to focus on further, or I tried that, maybe that's not quite a fit for me and I'm going to have an internship in something slightly different that could be a better fit. So it's a good opportunity throughout the Ross experience, I think, to explore professional interests.
And it even comes back to our very definition of sustainability. At the Herb Institute, we talk about what we call a robust sustainability. And so for us, sustainability is not only environment. To a lot of our students, the majority of our students are interested in environmental sustainability. So they're thinking about things like climate change, renewable energy, water, circular economy, materials and recycling. All of those are really important to a big chunk of our students. Our concept of robust sustainability goes beyond to include a broad range of risks and opportunities that affect business. So we're also thinking about social risk, community development and poverty alleviation, global supply chain, labor and working conditions, all the talk now about business and human rights. All of these create special risks and opportunities for business, and we want our graduates to have the tools and the experiences to incorporate those risks and opportunities into their business decision making.
So you're really looking at sustainability in the broadest of all possible contexts. It's not just environmental sciences if it's including human rights and poverty alleviation and everything else. It's really the broadest possible context.
Absolutely. And if one of our graduates goes out and let's say they are fascinated by climate change and they go out to work with a transnational, maybe they work for 2 years and then they're assigned to a new department and maybe it's starting up a new operation in Myanmar. And we want our graduate to be equipped with the experience and the perspective to know that when somebody asks them, oh, have you ever thought about business and human rights in Myanmar, that they don't have a deer in the headlights, but they've been introduced to that. Even if their focus is on environment, that they have enough introduction to say, oh, absolutely. We recognize that as a risk, and we want them to know where to go next to develop a strategy for a human rights risk assessment and a human rights strategy.
Okay, great. Now, just another question for Diana, and then I think I'm going to wrap up. Ross has the optional team exercise that you mentioned a few minutes ago. It's optional, but highly encouraged. So why is it optional?
Yeah, so, well, the reason the team exercise came about is a few years ago, we realized that we really needed additional insight into team to candidates' team-based interpersonal and communication skills, and we wanted to create an experience where we'd get a better feel for that. It also ties to what we know recruiters are looking for based on what we hear from our career services team, from recruiters directly, in terms of strong communication skills, ability to deal well with ambiguity, ability to pivot and be flexible. And so this experience really takes a look at all of those different elements. To your point about why is it not required, really it's a logistics thing. We cannot offer it in every continent around the globe and make it required for all of the diversity of places our candidates apply from. Mm-hmm. So we do offer it in Ann Arbor, both for round one and round two, even once for round three. And we also offer it in four different cities internationally in round two to be able to give as much exposure and opportunity as possible for students to be able to participate in the experience. Now, in terms of what we're looking for out of that experience, there's no one style or leadership behavior that we're looking for that would make somebody successful. We recognize that in our courses that students can come with different styles and abilities, and that's actually what we're looking for is the balance that makes things go here at a heavily team-based curriculum. So you could be the person who's quiet and only speaks up towards the end, but leaves with the nugget that that ultimately takes the team towards their solution, or perhaps you're the one that's helping to structure the outcomes for the team itself. Various styles can be successful in this experience.
Okay, great. Now, for both of you, what advice, final words of wisdom, do you have for applicants to Ross and to Herb? And Terry, do you want to start?
Yeah, I would say just one thing. I would really encourage applicants to reach out to IRB students and Ross students as part of their due diligence process. Our IRB students will give a whole new perspective from the inside out on what it means to be an IRB student. And if any applicants are interested, they can contact the IRB Institute. We're happy to put them in touch either with current students or recent alumni, who can give them a broader perspective on the work we do at IRB.
There also were some very good videos on your website. I was was preparing for today's talk, and I saw several of them. And one, at least one was just interviews with recent alumni. It was very, very good.
Yeah, we're doing more interviews now to try to. It's hard to communicate on the essence of community and passion. So we're trying to do it more with videos. You'll see them on our website. You'll have access to links after the webinar, but our website is herb.umich.edu.
Okay.
And so you can also find there we have a really active blog, the IRB Perspective blog, with students and alumni writing about their personal experiences in sustainability, some of the videos mentioned, reports that we produced, the original research we're doing. So that's another good source of information.
Okay. And Diana?
Linda, I would say the same thing about connecting with community members. I think for prospective students, it's sometimes challenging to think about all the top MBA programs and say, what really differentiates one program from another?
It did.
And, it's very tough. And I know, and you know what, talking to the people is going to be what separates the schools from one another and also gives that person a better understanding of, are these people that I would want to be around? Are these people that are going to challenge me, inspire me? Are these people that I would want as part of my alumni network? So we make it accessible to prospective students to reach out to. We have nearly 200 student ambassadors listed on our webpage, and we will put those links up after the podcast here that you can connect with based on their professional interests, the student organizations that they're involved with, where they might be from geographically, or where they went to school for undergrad. Variety of ways so that our prospective students who come from very diverse backgrounds and interests can find somebody who meets their needs and learn a little bit more about the program through the lens of people who've actually experienced it. You can also reach out to our alumni ambassadors as well. We make them as accessible as possible. Our community is incredibly welcoming to connecting with prospective students, and our alums pick up the phone. So we really we encourage folks to get to know the program through the lens of our stakeholders.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so we'll include links in the show notes at info.exima.com/114. Terry and Diana, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And you've already provided some resources that listeners and potential applicants can use to learn more about the Ross MBA and the Herb Institute. Is there anything else you want? And again, we'll want to send over and we'll include them in the show notes, but anything in particular?
I would also add, it's on our website. You'll find our 5-year strategic plan. And
right.
We just completed it. We spent 9 months. We went out and held roadshows in 6 cities across the U.S. and went to interview business leaders in China. We put it all together into just a 2-page document. It's up on the website, and it outlines our roadmap for impact as the Herb Institute over the next 5 years, and with special emphasis on global sustainability and the inordinate impact that emerging economies like China, India, Brazil are going to have on global sustainability, and how we want to work with business in those countries and here in the U.S. For sustainability impact. So I think that'd be another good reference to give us a sense of where we want to go.
Yeah, you actually sent me that earlier and included a link, or your assistant included a link, and I'll definitely include that in the show notes.
Great.
So, yeah, thank you. And the show notes, you'll be able to find, listener, at info.exhibit.com/114. And I want to thank you, too, for joining Diana Economy and Terry Nelidoff and me for our 114th episode. If you found the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps me spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk, especially if you leave 5-star feedback. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review if you're so inclined. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.exhibit.com/114114 or by sending an email to questions@exhibit.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.